I'm sure Greta will never think that anything's enough. We're going as absolutely fast as we can. I mean, we're looking at five different approaches, all simultaneously, all trying to maximize their impact.
Welcome to Sustainability in the Air, the world's first podcast dedicated to sustainable aviation. Our mission is to show the many paths to net zero for an industry that is one of the hardest to decarbonize. So every week, we speak with airline, airport, travel, and technology executives to help separate the signal from the noise. Whether you're a frequent flyer, an airline executive, if you care about sustainability, or just love traveling, welcome aboard. This is a show by Simplifying, who have been helping build trust in travel for over 15 years. This season of the podcast is brought to you by Cirium, which is empowering the global aviation industry to reach a more sustainable future with the most accurate aircraft emissions data. The show is also supported by CarbonClick, leaders in managing carbon offsetting programs for top global airlines. Without further ado, here is your host, Shashank Nigam, CEO of Simplifying.
While Airbus has bet big on hydrogen for the future of sustainable aviation, my conversation with Amanda Simpson goes way beyond just hydrogen. We discuss SAF, we discuss electric aircraft, UAMs, you name it. I'm sure you will find this conversation very insightful. My latest guest today is Amanda Simpson, who is an Airbus veteran, I would say, for a long time. But of course, fantastic career path. You, Amanda, were the executive director at the U.S. Army Office for Energy Initiatives, and you were also at Douglas Aircraft. I'm curious, what brought you those roles and finally to Airbus, and what are some of the key insights you had?
Well, thank you for having me, and I appreciate the question. You know, I've been in the aerospace industry now for a very long time, excess of four decades. And the unique opportunity that I saw at Airbus was to bring my experience with helicopters, commercial aircraft, military aircraft, space systems, and energy all together in one place and apply it to really, you know, moving aerospace into the future. So it was a really unique opportunity that I was given.
It is indeed unique. Now, let's dive right into the meat of it. Airbus, of course, is betting big, if you look at the future, in towards hydrogen. And tell us, I'm curious why Airbus chose hydrogen out of all the competing technologies for powering the future of aviation.
Well, I think the Airbus, we don't think of it as a bet, right? We see that for the future, Airbus and all of aerospace has to be cleaner, right? If we're going to not only meet the environmental goals that are set on a global scale, but if aviation is going to be part of the solution versus becoming a large part of the problem, right? We're only 2% of carbon emissions today, but as all the other sectors work to decarbonize, if we don't do anything, you know, that'll grow to be an unmanageable number. So we are starting now to determine what are the opportunities to reduce our not only our carbon footprint, but all of our environmental impact on the planet. And so through a lot of work over little more than a decade, we've tried a variety of different technologies, either through some of our demonstrators or, you know, just doing paper studies. And, you know, hydrogen has that potential that, you know, when you utilize it, all you get out is water, right? You take the hydrogen, you combine it with oxygen in the air, either you burn it through combustion or you combine it with oxygen to get electricity. And the only, you know, byproduct is water. So, you know, you're not contributing directly to the environmental impact, you know, negative climate impact. So we've decided that that's the way that the aerospace industry has to go. We feel that we're going to continue to be a leader, a pioneer in aerospace technology. So we are pressing forward as hard as we can to meet some of the goals that have been set, not only externally, but even more aggressive goals internally. So we're off and running at high speed.
As always, but I'm curious, just digging into this a bit more, why hydrogen combustion over hydrogen electric powertrains, which are being developed by the likes of ZeroAvia, which actually just got FAA approval to do its test flight.
Our hat was off, and we are absolutely supporting the efforts of ZeroAvia and Universal Hydrogen and the others who are leveraging the technology that's existing today, right? They're leveraging components and materials and, you know, modifying existing aircraft to do, you know, a little bit better than maybe a demonstration program, you know, and so their efficiencies aren't where we think they are have to be if you're going to have a viable commercial airliner. So hydrogen combustion, absolutely something that we see as critical. You know, you can burn hydrogen in a jet turbine today. They're just not optimized for it. And all the major manufacturers have announced projects that are working on hydrogen combustion. But also, we are absolutely in line with hydrogen electric, right? We just announced our progress on developing a hydrogen electric fuel cell pod that we're going to be testing in several years that is really optimized for the not only the new technology that we see coming, but also for the environment that a larger airliner is going to be requiring. So, you know, we're looking at all of these things right now and pressing forward because we want to find out what's going to be the most viable solution that we can apply to that new, you know, generation of airliners that we'll have to, you know, start building in the next, you know, within the next several years.
Right. And that's encouraging that you're looking at all technology and then supporting the ecosystem as well. Related to that, of course, Airbus initially showcased an all-electric EFAN at Farnborough. I remember as long ago as 2014, which then evolved into the hybrid electric project. Do you still see electric or hybrid electric as a viable or an interest area of interest for Airbus?
Well, I mean, we know that a battery electric is going to have its place in aerospace with the, but because of the battery issues with regards to weight and energy density, it's very limited. So you're going to see some of the upcoming electric vehicles for advanced air mobility, you know, just a few seats, a very limited range, very limited payload. And we're working on those. The hybrid electric, we see not so much that you want to be burning the kerosene fuels, the Jet A that you're using today, but hydrogen, as we talked about, has that opportunity to be used to create electricity to drive an electric aircraft. And we see that as a real potential for kind of the mid to shorter range aircraft, amount of power that is generated there and the speeds that you can operate an electric motor. Because right now, that's kind of the limiting factor, right, is the size of an electric motor that you can put on an aircraft. And then, you know, the hydrogen combustion, well, you know, that's going to be that larger aircraft that someday is going to fly in the future. And so we have to evaluate and start pushing that technology forward today.
Right. And you make a good point. Hydrogen will be the future of long-haul aircraft in the long term. And
eventually, yeah.
And tell us a little about Project Blue Condor, in which Airbus has, of course, been testing hydrogen engines. Why did you start with glider tests, for example?
Yeah, the Blue Condor project, I'm really excited about that because it's not so much looking at the engine technology. But one of the, you know, a concern about hydrogen is when you burn it in a combustion engine, what are the byproducts, right? We know that there's water vapor, but what else is going on? And how does that water vapor impact the formation of contrails? That has a potential, and there's a lot of research going on. What are the impacts of contrails on climate change? So we need to understand that. So by putting it's a modified Argus glider. We have a pair of them. And one of them has a small turbine engine that burns Jet A kerosene. And the other is modified to burn hydrogen. And the concept here is that these aircraft will be operated in the mid 30,000 foot range, somewhere between 30 and 35,000 feet. And we can then measure the emissions that are coming out of those engines to determine the difference between burning kerosene and burning hydrogen at altitude. And by putting them on a glider, we get a very clean measurement because it's not impacted by any other emissions coming from that aircraft. So it's not a development of the engine technology, but it's a better understanding of the climate impact of hydrogen up at altitude.
So the glider will definitely show you the impact, right? But there are skepticism. There's skepticism in the media as well as the climate change movement that, you know, whether this will ever become a reality. Specifically, going from glider test to full commercial flight in 12 years from now, is that realistic?
Well, again, you know, the glider tests are just to understand some of the climate impacts. What we have talked about is actually putting a aviation scale engine or motor on our A380 test platform, probably in the next, you know, well, we're saying in the 25-26 timeframe, right? So it's really right around the corner. For the combustion tests, we've partnered with General Electric and Safran, and they're going to provide the engine. It's a modified engine that is normally on like a large business class aircraft, and we're going to mount that as a fifth engine on a 380, so we can take that up to altitude and really do some testing of an aerospace class hydrogen engine. And then we also are building the hydrogen electric pod, right? And so that using fuel cells will be also tested on the 380 in approximately the same time frame. So, you know, we have to do these steps, right? Understand the science behind everything, develop the technology, do demonstrators to understand how well our theory can be applied, how well the engineering is maturing, and then actually then start developing that into a realistic design for a new airliner that is designed around the capabilities and the technology that's going to be available, well, in the 26-27 timeframe. So, which is coming up really quick. And you have to do that if we're going to get a new airliner out into service by the mid-30s. So, right. You know, time is ticking.
Indeed. Now, one of the other concerns, just digging into this a little bit further, is the Hydrogen Science Coalition estimates that there'll be a 15-40% payload reduction when you use liquid hydrogen as opposed to jet A fuel, just because of energy density. How much do you think is this an issue, and how is Airbus addressing this?
Yeah, so I mean, it's interesting trying to evaluate or equate jet fuel to hydrogen. There's a couple of issues. First, for every unit weight of hydrogen, so a kilo of hydrogen contains three times as much energy as an equivalent unit of jet fuel. Three times as much, right? So you only need about one third of the weight of fuel to carry the same amount of energy in the aircraft. Now, on the bad side is that hydrogen takes up more volume. So that even after you compress and you liquefy that 1 kilometer, 1 kilo, excuse me, that 1 kilo of hydrogen, it takes up four times the volume of jet fuel. So the issue is not one of weight, but of volume. And to have a liquid hydrogen tank, which is a cryogenic, super cold, so it's the weight of the tank itself that becomes the issue. Now, if you're going to try to put all of that into an existing airframe, you're going to pay a payload penalty. However, if you design the aircraft from the start to meet a particular performance parameters, right, range and payload, based on a hydrogen propulsion-based propulsion system, you don't pay the weight penalty because you put all of that into the design right from the beginning. So while those numbers that you quoted are based on taking an existing aircraft and trying to modify it for hydrogen, what we're talking about is a clean sheet design that right from the start is focused on sustainability.
So just digging into that then, clean sheet design, of course, carrying hydrogen is much more, it takes much more volume. So are we talking about blended wing design? What are we looking at? Of course, Airbus released some very pretty concepts earlier.
Yeah. So, I mean, with a clean sheet design, there's lots of things to look at, right? And I think the one that caught the attention was the blended wing body, which provides a more volume for its wingspan. Certainly, it has some advantages, but it also has some manufacturing issues that have to be addressed. It could be, you know, we expect it probably will look more like a traditional tube and wing, but we, you know, haven't made any determinations on that. And then the question becomes one, you know, you're not going to put liquid hydrogen in the wings like we store fuel today because of its cryogenic properties. It's best stored in a spherical or a near a cylindrical tank. So the question becomes, where do you put that, right? Do you put it under the wings in large pods? Do you put it in a cupola up on top of the passenger compartment? Or do you just say the aircraft's going to be longer and a section of the fuselage at the rear is going to have that that energy storage in the hydrogen tanks? So we're looking at all of those things. But, and here's the interesting part, when you take the fuel out of the wings, you no longer they don't have to be fuel tanks anymore. So now you can optimize the wings for aerodynamics. So regardless of which way we're going to go, you're going to see a very different looking wing. It's going to be thinner. It's going to be longer. It might be more flexible. And through our Airbus Advanced Wing Program, we're going to be flying, we expect later this year, our high ratio wing that actually has advanced capabilities in it. The outer third of the wing moves in flight, so you can adjust its angles, and it is looking at a much, much more efficient wing. So there's a lot of other things that are going to be coming into place when you start with that clean sheet design.
Right. This is quite exciting.
By the way, it's the extra performance wing.
The extra performance wing. I'm looking forward to seeing it come out. Okay. Now, infrastructure challenges are not related just to the aircraft, but also the airport, because storing hydrogen, transporting hydrogen is very different from an airport perspective. For example, think of a large 50 million passenger sized airport like Toronto Pearson, which used to be my former home airport. That would have to allow the equivalent of a new airport terminal to store hydrogen. How does this actually work?
Well, I don't know that it would be a new terminal per se, but you have to look at a different way of storing fuel and delivering fuel on the airport and bringing fuel on the airport. Now, one of the really advantages of hydrogen is you can produce it anywhere. All you need is access to electricity, and hopefully it is clean electricity from solar or wind or other sources, and water, and you can actually generate hydrogen on site. But I will tell you, here in the United States, there's 10 million metric tons of liquid hydrogen that are moved around the United States and have been for decades because it's used in other industrial processes. Very, very high safety record with that regards. But as other industries, i.e. the ground transportation, whether it be long haul trucking, automobiles, and industries start to use more and more hydrogen as they convert away from fossil fuels, the availability of hydrogen will escalate. So this isn't an aviation or an aerospace issue. This is an entire energy and transportation ecosystem that is being looked at from many, many fronts. So, you know, Airbus and aviation is part of the solution. We're working in partnerships with all these other industries to determine how to move forward. And, you know, if we go back, 60, 70 years, back then, aviation was using gasoline, right? And we made over time the transition away from gasoline in piston engines to kerosene in jet engines. And the airports made that adaptation over time. So this will be something that over time, airports will start putting in the infrastructure to support hydrogen. That will grow over time as more aircraft become available, as more routes become open, and it will spread and become more available. So it is a multi-decadal project. You know, it doesn't have to be, an overnight switch. You're going to have that availability of multiple fuels starting in the mid 30s, and will continue to grow as the entire industry starts to transform.
Right. So I think this is a good way to frame this situation, right? It's a long-term bet. We are working towards it.
This is a very long-term issue. This is not going to be solved in the next 5 to 10 years, but we have to start today if we're actually ever going to reach those goals.
Right. So let's still thinking about long-term, right? Airbus is currently the largest new aircraft manufacturer in the world. And the aircraft you are manufacturing today will continue coming off the assembly line and still be flying in 2050.
Oh, yeah. Oh, right? Absolutely.
And that means there'll be over 20,000 aircraft which are using current technology with a second, third, or fourth operator through them using traditional fuel or fuel alternates. What do you say to the argument that the only realistic solution here is SAF and that hydrogen-powered aircraft will only make a small dent in the race to net zero?
So let's talk about SAF, which is often, is abbreviation of sustainable aviation fuels. And there's a couple of different types underneath. And so let's talk about them because they are the near-term solution, but they also have a way and they will grow and develop for a longer-term solution. So let's go back to that. Every aircraft that we produce and have produced can operate today on a 50% blend of SAF, right? So it's 50% traditional kerosene and up to 50% of the sustainable aviation fuels today, which are biofuels, right? Their carbon comes from the biosphere, whether it's oil from cooking French fries to solid municipal waste to the forestry clippings. But it's very much a biofuel dependent. Now, our goal is by the end of this decade that every aircraft that we produce is compatible with up to 100% sustainable aviation fuel. But here's the limitation with these biofuels. There's a couple. One is that you cannot reach net zero with them because while you are taking, you're still emitting all the carbon dioxide, nitric oxide, sulfuric oxide, carbon monoxide, soot, and all those things are still coming out of the tailpipe of the aircraft. So while that goes into the atmosphere and then gets absorbed into the biosphere, which you then harvest to create fuel, that takes energy and it's not 100% efficient. So we're looking at maybe an 80% recycle rate. So for the other 20%, you have to look at different types of offsets, right? Direct air carbon capture, planting more trees. There's a variety of different ways, but you can never quite get to net zero. So the transition to hydrogen that eliminates the need to tap into the biosphere is going to be necessary. For the second reason as well, is you don't want the demand for bioproducts to turn into aviation fuel to compete with food, right? That's where we want our biosphere to support our food production. So in the long term, you go from those biofuels to what we call power to liquid or synthetic aviation fuel that uses hydrogen, again, combined with carbon pulled from the air through those direct air carbon capture facilities. And if you take hydrogen and carbon, you can put them together to make artificial and synthetic hydrocarbons. So you can actually create a synthetic fuel. Again, that still takes energy, but now you're not using the biosphere to create that energy. So there is going to always be a future for that because the 30,000 airliners that are in operation today, between us and our competition, the 15 to 2,000 aircraft that are coming off the line each year are going to be in operation for decades. I mean, our aircraft last 20 to 30 years. So we have to having those type of sustainable and synthetic fuels has to be part of the long-term solution. But as we develop the capabilities, the technology, and the experience utilizing these clean fuels like hydrogen, they're going to start moving into that market. And as those aircraft retire, we can start to replace them with these cleaner aircraft. And then again, over decades, and it's a long time, we will eventually end up with a clean fleet. But we're talking many, many, many years in the future.
Right. It's very well distant. Thank you. Thank you for digging through it and explaining it step by step. And you're right. We are looking at the long term here. One of the other interesting developments is, of course, eVTOLs. And Airbus has been involved. Do you feel that's a niche, or is it something that you're seriously looking at?
Yeah. So, I mean, eVTOLs have an interesting place in aerospace, right? So, we flew the Vahana aircraft several years ago, which was a single seat, all electric battery aircraft, completely autonomous. We tested what we called the City Airbus, which was a 4-seat, larger eVTOL. I called it the world's largest quadcopter because that's kind of what it looked like. And today we're working on the City Airbus next generation, which is has 8 propellers, no moving surfaces, and that is being assembled now, and we're hoping to have first flight before the end of this year. And the idea there is, we're looking at a 4-seat aircraft, and this would replace some of the ground transportation that is still dirty, right? So when we can start using battery electrics in that very small, limited payload and range, then you start replacing some of the fossil fuel burning vehicles. So that's where you start and you open up some new ways to use the third dimension in transportation, particularly around cities. So we are working on that. We're going to see some things hopefully soon. Again, a very exciting as we really expand how aerospace impacts our lives, which has changed society immensely since it came into existence just over 100 years ago.
Absolutely. Now, looking ahead to 2050, do you think net zero for aviation is realistic? Are we doing things at the right speed? Should we be going faster? Greta keeps saying it's not enough.
Well, yeah, I'm sure Greta will never think that anything's enough. We're going as absolutely fast as we can. I mean, we're looking at 5 different approaches, all simultaneously, all trying to maximize their impact. We talked about sustainable aviation fuel, right? We got to get as much sustainable aviation fuels as we can into the market. Today, it accounts for less than 1% of the available fuels. And that's not an aviation restriction. That's just the ability of the energy industry to produce those, right? So we have to work to develop and produce more of those fuels to get away from the fossil fuels. So that's one. 2 is the new technologies, right? It's going to be the hydrogen. It's going to be the more advanced aerodynamics. It's all the things that are going into the airplane of the future, which probably we won't start seeing till the mid-30s, right? So that's a little further off. It's utilizing advanced artificial intelligence and computing techniques in the air traffic management systems so that each flight that we have is optimized and sustainable to the maximum extent that we can, right? We, for those of us who've flown, right, we've sat on the airplane with the engines running on the ground, not a good thing, right? So how do we optimize to get away from that so you don't start your engines until you can go directly to the end of the runway, take off and climb right to your most efficient cruise altitude without any mid-level level offs. And the same thing on, afterwards. So a lot of technology is going into just how we operate aircraft. The fourth way, I talked a little bit about the offsets, right? Ways to offset the current emissions. And that's going to continue to some future as the others develop. And then the fifth way is something that the airlines are doing today, which is starting to replace and update their fleets with today's aircraft. The aircraft that are coming off the production line today, when you compare them to the aircraft of only 5 years ago, they're 15 to 20% lower emissions. So fleet replacement, whether it's with these cleaner aircraft today or the new technologies in the future, are key to reaching that 2050 goal. So all five of those things have to be employed at the same time to get to net zero. And we are absolutely not, and not just us. I mean, the whole industry is working together to try to meet this goal. And we've made that commitment. Yes, it seems to be a long way off, but by golly, it is just around the corner.
Very well summarized. Thank you so much, Amanda. You summed it up very, very nicely in a structured manner for me. Now, the final bit of this interview is what I call the rapid fire round, in which we get to know you a little bit more, and most audience, you know, outside of Airbus would not have until now. So we'll start with something simple. What's your favorite book?
So a book I read long, long time ago and really inspired me is Jonathan Livingston Seagull. That and a book that came out later called The Reluctant Messiah by the same author. Oh my God. It just, they took me and said, I need to fly. And I've been a pilot for 43 years and just love it.
Exactly. Transformational. I agree. I received that as my 16th birthday gift from one of my best friends, and I still have it with me. What about your favorite airline?
Oh, well, I'm sorry. I cannot.
Come on. You can say a favorite that you don't often fly, which you really enjoyed flying.
No. I'm just going to avoid that. I'm literally looking out the window at Dulles International Airport, and there's almost every airline you can think of. And of course, the ones that operate Airbus aircraft are going to be very high on my list, quite frankly.
Well, you are in Washington, D.C., so we can expect you to be politically correct, so that's fine.
Well, you know, after 8 years in the Pentagon, and you mentioned my time as the executive director of the Army Office of Energy Initiatives, but I also spent 2.5 years as the Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense. So,
Right, you have been at the Pentagon as well. What about your favorite city?
I love D.C., but sometimes either of those are not the best in certain weather conditions. I will tell you that I lived 20 years in Tucson, Arizona, and I love Tucson, Arizona.
I've heard great things about it as well. I've not been. I would love to visit sometime. What about your favorite movie?
If I put that on, I would say The Right Stuff. Again, something that inspires me. I got to meet some of the people who were represented in that movie over my interaction with aerospace. And again, space travel, pushing the envelope, just exciting stuff. So yeah, the right stuff.
Now, of course, you are a very learned person. You know how to fly. You've worked in government. You've worked now in manufacturing, everything. What is something you still want to learn?
I guess I want to learn how to relax and slow down. There will become a time for that. It's not now. As I said, we're rushing forward with all the, you know, getting all these new technologies developed. But one day I'm going to have to learn how to relax.
R&R is definitely needed and highly, highly encouraged. Who do you look up to?
You know, I will tell you that my time in the Pentagon really inspired me. So I do look up to our warriors around the world who are ensuring that we have the ability to pursue all these technologies and live the lives that we do. They have literally pledged their lives so that we can do what we do.
That's heartfelt, definitely. And finally, what is the best advice you've ever received?
So a CEO I used to work with, she told me, and something that I've embraced is when leading other people, the best way is to share with them, share your ideas and share your passions so that they become their ideas and their passions, and then they embrace and move forward. So that was one of the best pieces of advice that I've actually embraced very much over my career.
Well said, well said, very well said indeed. Very inspiring. Thank you. I think you're an optimist like I am. And it's great to see you put in practice every single thing you've worked on in your career now at Airbus and making the future of flying better and more sustainable.
Yeah, to be an optimist, one has to believe in the future. And I absolutely believe in the future.
Absolutely. Thank you, Amanda. Is there anything we haven't spoken about that you wanted to share?
I think we've hit the highlights. So
thank you very much, Amanda. It was a pleasure speaking.
All right. My pleasure as well.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Sustainability in the Air, the world's first podcast dedicated to sustainable aviation. Awareness is the key to a green future. So please give us your support to help our sustainable aviation insights reach a wider audience. You can do this by sharing us with your network or leaving a review. For more information on how aircraft emissions data can help you reach your sustainability goals, visit Cirium from the link in the show notes. You can start a conversation with us at podcast@simplifying.com. And for more content on sustainable aviation, please visit our website, simplifying.com, and join the movement.